Some may find the following disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Welcome one and all to GTF Gabriel Talks Football. My name is Aldo Gandia. Quick programming note, tonight it will be Draft on Tap, and Danny Shimon's special guest is scheduled to be Herb Howard. And so the two of them will talk about the Bears draft. And then tomorrow I am hosting a special sometime in the morning. I haven't set up what time yet, but just I've edited together our draft coverage, our 8 hours or whatever it was of draft coverage with our analysts talking about the Bears draft picks. And then also tonight, as a programming note, I forgot that at 6 p.m., Mac and Reed will also be talking about the Bears draft. So we've got a lot of Bears coverage for you. But it all starts with one man, and his name is Greg Gabriel. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good morning, everybody.
Look at that picture. It's crystal clear. Your audio is perfect. What's going on here, Greg?
Well, I just switched to my iPod instead of my computer. I didn't know if my voice would come through good, but so far it's okay.
Oh, everybody loves it. They are saying that Aldo must be paying you well. That's a good one. Greg, your immediate thoughts now that all five picks are settling in, we'll be at Halas Hall for OTAs very soon. What are your thoughts about Ryan Poles' third NFL draft as general manager of the Chicago Bears?
Well, overall, I liked it. Now, I didn't like it when they made that fourth round pick. You know, so we knew there was a need for an edge. Mm-hmm. And then he takes a punter. And the guy's good. There's no question he's good. You know, it was that too high to take that guy? The last time a punter went real high was in 22. Mm-hmm. The Bills took Arazia out of San Diego State, who also had a cannon for a leg. He only played in the preseason, and then because of all that was going on at a previous circumstance at San Diego State, they had to cut him. He's back in the league now. He signed a couple months ago with Kansas City, and he's going to be a weapon. But he went like the sixth round or fifth round. And so it's like, and that guy, I mean, had a booming leg. Mm-hmm. So it's like, did they take too much? And then they still didn't get the edge. But then I was thinking, you know what? Because they kept putting the camera on the Bears room. They're still there like they're working. And a lot of times you're done with your pick and you're going in your own offices and you're making calls on free agents, trying to lock up some deals and things. So, and he had said in his presser, he's not adverse to trading back into the draft and using something next year. Mm-hmm. Now we know they needed an edge in between that pick of taking the punter and them trading back in and taking Austin Booker, one edge went. That's it. So really, and that guy wouldn't have been in the equation, Xavier Thomas from Clemson, who is a trait guy, but not a good player. So really, all the guys that you could have had in the fourth round were still there in the fifth round. So now it turns out to be excellent because you got the, you know, what if you missed out on the punter, who will be a weapon, and you know, and didn't get an edge, and now you got both. So, and you gave up a fourth for next year. Austin Booker is a good player. Personally, I liked Jackson from Washington State better. Booker's got more upside because of his athleticism, and he's raw. I mean, you know, he's really only played 1 year of college football. You know, he enrolled at Minnesota in 21, and he redshirted. 22, he was a backup and didn't play too much. So right. Then he transfers to Kansas, and even though he only started one game, he was their nickel guy. He played 500 snaps, was their leading sacker with 80, had a bunch of pressures. He's got natural pass rush ability. He's got bend. He's got lean. He's got real long arms. You know, he's got what you want. What he doesn't have is bulk. Now, what's interesting is weight. They put his weight at 240, and that's what he weighed at the combine. But, you know, I got the list of all the pro days from every school, from the APT. I got it from a general manager. And it has the weight they are that day. He weighed 252 at Kansas Pro Day. Mm-hmm. So he's 12 pounds heavier. Now, he only did position drills. He didn't run anymore. I think that reality is when you, because he's got sort of a narrow frame, he's going to be a max 255, 258 guy. And you got to put good weight on him. You got to do it the right way. You know, you don't want him to be fat. Right. He didn't run as good as anticipated. I thought watching tape, he's going to be like a 4.65 guy. He ran a 4.78 or something. He's got such a quick first step. Nice. And for a guy that hasn't played that much, he can really use his hands well. And he's got a majority of moves. He's got an outside in move. He uses the over under move well. He can swim. You know, he can do a lot of things. And you're saying, for a guy who hasn't played, he's like advanced. Mm-hmm. So I think this year you're getting a DPR, designated pass rusher. You know, whether he can hold up against the run at whatever weight he ends up playing at this year, because it's too much to say get to 255 this year. That's not good weight. You know, and I know Jimmy Arthur, the strength coach, because he was here with Rusty. You got to do it gradually and you do it right way, proper nutrition. You know, he might be 247, 248 or something like that this year. And then next year be in the 250s, and that'll be fine in this defense to play every down. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm excited about the pick. The mm-hmm. only reason I like Jackson better is just Jackson was more ready to play every down this year. But the upside of Booker is obviously better. He's a better athlete. He's more flexible. So good overall pick. I'll tell you another thing that was interesting. And our guest on Saturday, Eric Duracker, sent me a text just a little while ago. I guess Weider on the score today. So the Bears have been in contact with Ngakoue all through the offseason, basically monitoring him for his, you know, on his rehab for his broken ankle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So whether that means they bring him back, who knows? But both of them are in, I guess, waiting. From what I did not hear Dan on the radio, so I got this from Eric, but they're in, like, wait and see mode. Part of it probably depends on the rehab and when he's ready to go.
That's good news.
It's been 5 months since he broke it, but you know, he had surgery. What was the extent of the surgery?
Right. Well, that's the good news. Cause I think he would be an excellent addition. You know, Ngakoue is not the kind of player who is a dominating pass rusher. But he can be effective with the right matchup and some proper, you know, you get that inside pass rush. He can get the job done and can be a one-year bridge to an Austin Booker or an acquisition for in 2025 to play that speed pass rush position.
Well, you know, before last year, he had averaged like 10 sacks a year.
Right, 9.5.
You know, so, I mean, he was a consistent double-digit sack guy. Mm-hmm. So last year was his down year. It's still there, and reality is that after the Bears acquired Montez Sweat, he played better. Now, part of that is he was the only pass rusher before they got Montez Sweat, and he was getting doubled a lot. They were concentrating on Stoutman because they had nobody else. So it really, if he's ready to go, if his ankle's healed and you got him on one side, Sweat on the other, you got Booker as a kind of a swing guy to rotate in and out while he's learning, that's a pretty good situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Flex Takes says that they were calling him during the season last year too to monitor him because they didn't know he was on the field. Flex, come on, be nice. We're celebrating. kidding. All right. What I'd like to do, and by the way, I'm collecting questions. I got seven in the queue from David, Servant, Flex, and Englewood, Jim Bob, Bush Hog. So we're going to get to your questions in a little while. But what I'd like to do is go over all of these picks, these five picks that Ryan Poles did, and get Greg's thoughts before we head into OTAs and we get reports on how well these guys are looking, which, you know, that doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot. But I just want to get Greg's thoughts on these picks, starting with the first overall pick, of course, Caleb Williams. No surprise there. But what are your expectations for Caleb? And, you know, the more you study him, because I know you've looked at him more closely, what are your thoughts about what he brings to the Chicago Bears?
Well, you know, obviously he's got to come in and play. I mean, he is the guy. There's no question about the talent. And as Pompey pointed out and stuff, that it's the – are the intangibles exactly what you want for an NFL quarterback? That remains to be seen. The Bears are good with everything, and that's the important thing. And they sure as hell did a lot more research than I did, and I did a lot. But, you know, the talent, he's as good as has come into the league since Andrew Luck, and that was 2012. So that's a long time ago. You know, the fans – because of all these offensive acquisitions, are expecting a playoff run, get to the playoffs this year like Houston did last year. To me, that could be a little bit far-fetched. Could it happen? Absolutely. Will it happen? Who knows? Here's the facts. Going back to the year Luck got drafted, so 2012, there's only been two rookie quarterbacks who were drafted high like that. Luck went in the first spot. C.J. Stroud went in pick number two last year. They're the only guys to take their team to the playoffs as rookies that were in that real high playoff spot. So it has happened, but look, there was like 12 seasons in between Andrew Luck and C.J. Stroud. So, and a lot of good quarterbacks were taken in between there. Right. So it's not something that happens. You hope that it happens. You want this team to be better. I mean, worst case scenario is you want a team with a winning record, but we hope better than that because the defense – played good down the stretch. What was their record? 5-3 for the last eight games, something like that.
I think so, yes.
So, you know, the arrow's pointing up and you've got more playmakers. What's exciting about the different playmakers is like, who are you going to double? There's really nobody you can double because they're all pretty darn good. And so you can spread the ball around, and that is going to be a big help for Caleb Williams. Now it's a matter of, okay, how quickly does he learn how to read a defense? In college, he was able to get the ball out of his hand really quickly when he saw the open guy. When he did hold on to the ball too long, it's because he was trying to hit the home run. And when you compare tape from 2023 to 2023 USC sucked, especially their defense. So they had a score 40 to 50 points to win a game, where the overall team was a lot better. And I think Caleb's play was better because this year he was trying too hard to make the big play and leaving the play that was there on the field. And I can't necessarily blame him for that, but he can't do that at the NFL level. If there's a play there and it's going to be 7-8 yards, get the 7 and 8 yards. You don't have to hit home run. What you want to do is hold on the ball, keep getting first downs, and move downfield.
He has really taken on a lot in terms of some of the things he says, you know, that he wants to be a, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't remember the exact word, but a monumental player, you know. He talks in grandiose terms about what he and the team are going to become because of his presence. So, how dangerous is that for a young man, a 21, 22-year-old man, entering the National Football League? A lot of people remember when Justin Fields said, you know, the game isn't fast for me, and it quickly proved to be very fast for him. Do you have any concerns about that really, you know, maybe overly confident attitude that he has?
Well, he's got confidence in his own ability. He's got confidence in himself, and that's a good thing. People that know him, one person that I talked to that has spoken to him a number of times, said that, you know, he thinks he's already a top level quarterback and you're not going to talk him out of that. That confidence is good. Now he's going to be in for a rude awakening as soon as he gets into training camp and some balls get slapped back in his face or he gets hit for a sack or whatever, but that's part of the growing pains and learning to play within the speed of the game at the NFL. But his, I guess his overall confidence in his own ability, I take as a positive thing, especially at that position.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we move on to the next player, there are a couple of questions here regarding Caleb Williams. So since we're on the subject, let's see. I've got where'd it go? People were asking, do you think that there could be an issue regarding the signing of the contract? You know, the CBA basically puts in salary figures for that number one overall pick. But is there the possibility that it could be a holdout? Because we've seen holdouts before.
Well, I mean, could there be? Yeah. Will there be? I don't know. You know, as far as we know, he doesn't have an agent. He has an advisor.
Right.
He has to have an agent. And if the advisor that I was, if it's in fact the advisor that I was told it was the advisor, he is a certified agent. He could easily do the contract. The numbers aren't going to change. The overall value of the contract over the first 4 years of the contract, that's not going to change. Some of it is the structure on, you know, on the bonus, how things are paid out each particular year. That was one of the problems with Roquan Smith when he held out. It's to Caleb's advantage to be in from day one, to be here all through OTAs, to be here, you know, from day one. Now, got to go back to one thing, because this is kind of important, and I like that the Bears did it this way. You have 2 weekends in which you can have your rookie mini camp with your new draft choices and undrafted free agents. It could be the week after the draft, which is this coming weekend, or the following week. Bears chose the following week.
Okay.
So, but the following week ends on the day or the day before the rookies can report to the OTAs. So when they come in next week for rookie mini camp, they're here. They're here till the end of June when OTAs and then the regular off-season mini camp ends OTAs. So that's around the 20th of June or whatever. So he's going to be here for a good month learning things. Then he's off. Now camp will open because they're playing the extra preseason game. So camp's going to open up a little bit earlier. And that's an advantage, assuming he's here on time. That's an advantage for him and the Bears because it gets him one extra week and one extra game to get acclimated to the NFL and get acclimated to the Bears offense.
Okay. There is one other question here, and I'm not really sure, you know, we can answer that, but I'll post it up here. This is from losing my questions. Are we going to, John Hammer says, do you think we're going to see a presence from Caleb Williams' father in the Chicago media, him? Because he appears to have a large role in his son's businesses. Do you think that could be troublesome for the Bears?
Well, I know that, you know, going back a year, and then through summer and stuff, that and in interviewing agents, et cetera, that there was some problem between dad and some agents. That seems to have been rectified. I don't know for sure, that he knows his place, and I'm not trying to say that in a negative way.
Yeah.
It's like, don't get involved in what you don't know about. Let the people who know what they're doing do that. I think, you know, he's a very astute, intelligent man. He's probably going to be involved in the off-field endorsements or whatever that, that Caleb gets involved in. I mean, as far as the NIL, I don't know how much the dad had to do with the NIL that, that Caleb had, but he certainly had a home run with that. So, sure I mean, I've heard several different figures. Who the hell knows what's true? So, you know, from that standpoint, he's good. I mean, he's been very successful as a businessman. Yes, so you got to take that. It's just you don't want him to be a problem for the Bears. I'm not anticipating that. If you notice, if you heard a peep out of Dad since even weeks before the draft,
right?
At his pro day, nothing. At the draft, nothing. You know, so you know, it seems like he's stepped back and taken himself out of the limelight.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I get the feeling that he probably saw that some of the things that he mentioned to the media created a firestorm, so to speak. And so he probably said, you know what, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. So, all right, New England Bears fan says, Greg, given the rumors that Caleb didn't want to play in Chicago, what do you think of his emotional recovery to being drafted? Now, we don't know for sure that he did not.
I was just going to say that. There was rumors started by people, you know, like RG3 said he should pull a Peyton Manning and or not a Peyton Manning, and Eli Manning and not want to go there. Those are by other people. There was nothing by him saying he didn't want to play in Chicago.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
So any rumor is totally false. There's nothing that substantiates.
Yeah. The only thing that ever came close to us hearing anything publicly about that is he said some nice things at the combine about Washington and his meeting with them. That was it. But he never publicly expressed, or we got from a legitimate source, that he had misgivings about coming to Chicago.
All right. Well, you know, just go back to the moment he got drafted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he didn't like just slow. If he was disappointed in going to Chicago, you know, maybe shoulders slumped down, take a slow walk up to the stage, meet the commish. He was freaking sprinting.
Yeah,
exactly. Walking fast, and then he screams when he walks out onto the stage. Those are all positive things.
Yes, indeed. Very, very positive. One more question, and then we'll move on to our next player. Flex wants to know, Greg, there are rules against getting the playbook too early, but we know Caleb has worked with Shane Waldron before. They've been on some Zoom calls. Do you think Caleb can hit the ground running from day one? Does Caleb have the playbook now that he's been drafted, or does he have to sign a contract?
Oh, he doesn't have to sign a contract because he's not going to have a contract for rookie minicamp. Okay. I mean, could they have given him one last Friday when he came here? Mm-hmm. And had his presser with Rome? Sure. Why not? Yeah. I mean, I don't know the exact rules on that, but or you might not have given him the whole playbook, but you might have given him some partial stuff, because they're not going to do a whole lot in minicamp, rookie minicamp. Right. You know, it's an introduction. But he's here for the duration. He's not going home from the rookie minicamp. He's here. And then he's starting that next Monday. Well, actually, the next day, if the rookie minicamp is Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday's working with the vets, both in the weight room and out on the field. Because you can't work offense against defense during that period, but you can have the offense together, running plays, that type of thing, doing one-on-ones. You can't have 7-on-7 or anything like that. You can't do that until OTAs, offense against defense, and then obviously minicamp. But he can, you know, it's like the individual and each side of the ball part of practice. They're working on, you know, in his case, the offensive side. So he can do a lot of offensive team as well as stuff with the receivers.
By the way, I want to say this. I love Mel Kiper. I found an entertaining and interesting since I first saw him decades ago. But he graded the Bears draft, and I know grades don't mean crap, but it's just funny that he graded the Bears draft as a B, and as Eric pointed out to me on X, those three players the Bears selected, he had in one of the mock drafts for the Bears. So he's essentially giving himself a B.
Yeah, well, anyway. If you saw their first draft show after, and Mel's been a friend of mine for going back to the 80s.
Yeah, I know, you told me.
And I think he was just doing it for the hell of it because he said, you know, basically a blind person. Basically, as Bill Tobin said, the mailman could make those picks, you know.
Exactly.
You know, years ago.
Exactly.
So what? They made the picks.
Right. Right. You know. And he said that he gave the grade while he was driving 9 hours from Detroit to his home, and so he was tired.
He left the minute he was done. Mm-hmm. He was in the car, going back to Baltimore.
Yeah. Wow, what a life. He must not like to fly if he's
he doesn't
that long drive.
Absolutely abhors it. He won't fly unless he absolutely has to. Wow. And they you know, have ESPN gets a car for him and a driver. He sits mm-hmm. in the back seat like he did on his way to Detroit from Baltimore. So mm-hmm. this was last Tuesday. He mm-hmm. did like 6 radio hits in the car during the drive.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about the next draft pick, first round, number 9 overall, wide receiver out of Washington, Rome Odunze. Everyone thinks this guy is going to be an excellent football player, but there were some people who thought, including Olin Krutz, why the hell are they taking the athletic, the skill player instead of getting somebody in the trenches? Look at what Harbaugh did. He immediately selects Alt because he knows you got to win in the trenches. The Bears have had problems in the trenches. Why didn't they go offensive line? Do you agree with Olin that an offensive line should have been picked there, or maybe trade down a few spots and then pick an offensive lineman as opposed to Roman Dunzer?
I get where, well, if I was going to pick a lineman, it would have been a defensive lineman, not an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
It really depends on, you know, what's your thought process on Braxton Jones. And, you know, I've said what I think 1,000 times on this show. And I know that's exactly how they feel in Hal Assault. If they didn't feel that way, they could have taken Fusciano from Penn State. Latham, who actually was the second offensive tackle taken, is a right tackle only. And you could say, well, sure, you could put him at right tackle and right over to the left side. But Wright's only played the left side 1 year, and he's a natural right tackle. You know, he could and why, after he's had a lot of success at right tackle as a rookie, would you want to put him in a new situation just to screw him up in year two? Let him grow, because he's going to be a dominant player at that position going forward. So the next guy, if you were going to go at an offensive line position, and part of it is you got to go by your board. And they had, like, Daniel Jeremiah had Odunze as his third player on his board. But that, you know, that's Daniel's ratings. Team ratings are going to be different, but it sounded as if Odunze was a top 5 player on the Bears board, just, you know, listening to the press conferences. And the only thing I you know, Ryan Pohl said in the presser after the draft, he goes, there's no way I would have believed that we could have got both of these guys. Where everybody in the world had Odunze mocked to the Bears mm-hmm. and had, you know, he thought maybe Atlanta was going to take, but everybody had Atlanta taking a defensive player, you know, an edge player. So, in fact, and then in the days leading up, originally it was Turner, and then in the days leading up, it was the defensive tackle, Murphy. So, I you know, obviously he does his own research. He felt that they may go that way, but they didn't. He got the guy they wanted. But getting back to Fusciano, I don't think Fusciano is close to the athlete that Braxton Jones is. Mm-hmm. He's got more bulk. He could probably anchor better. But he ain't the athlete. And I think Braxton Jones is going to just start coming into his own now. Now it's his third year. He got stronger in the lower body between year one and year two. Unfortunately, he had that neck injury, missed five games or four and a half games because of that. But, you know, he's a guy that is a big-time worker, and there's no doubt that he's, you know, spends a lot of that time working on the lower body. And I thought his anchor last year was pretty darn good, especially as compared to the year before. It's going to be even better. I think he's going to be, you know, never be a Pro Bowler, but he's going to be a darn good left tackle in this league. And then, and we'll get to him later, but then he drafted another one who's very similar coming out in Amagadeji.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I gotta go back in time here. It was about 5 or maybe 6 weeks ago that you had on this show, your show, Eric Galco of the Shrine Bowl game. And this is what he said about Roma Dunze.
I'd be surprised. I think if just not because I've heard something, but it just feels like a Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze pairing is going to happen in Chicago. That feels like it's still going to happen even after Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. You know, Keenan's better in the slot. I think Rome's an outside guy. I know him and Caleb have talked quite a bit. So if Caleb's going to be the first overall pick, which I feel confident he will be, I think Rome makes a lot of sense for the Bears as well, too.
How about that? I mean, you know, he said he didn't know anything. Who knows, right? But because it is the line season. But it was interesting that he predicted that 6-7 weeks ago. And I know a lot of people did, but he just had a strong inkling. And you challenged him on that. You one of the things you said is, I don't know if Rome is going to be available at number 8. So we again, as somebody said in the chat room, we again have to thank Ryan Pace of the Atlanta Falcons administrative crew there, scouting team, for not drafting Roma Dunze.
Well, you know, reality is Ryan Pace doesn't make that pick.
Okay.
Fontenot does. He's the general manager.
Yeah.
Ryan Pace has something to say about it. So okay. Does the head coach. Mm-hmm. But it's Fontenot's final call, being that he is the general manager. It just came out of nowhere. And we talked ourselves to death on this on Friday morning, you know, after in between the day one and day two. So, it is what it is. Could somebody have traded up? And maybe that's what Ryan Poles was thinking. Somebody, you know, everybody keeps mocking a Dunze to us. So somebody's going to trade up and get in front of us and take the guy. That very well could have been true. So, but they got the guy, quality player, doesn't have the flat out speed that Harrison and Neighbors has. Great route runner, plays big, excellent body control, excellent route runner ability to get out in and out of cuts. His catch radius is huge. Mm-hmm. It's a good run after the catch guy that shows up. You know, he's returned punts in college, and that open field running ability that he has returning punts shows after he catches the ball. He's a really good receiver. And, you know, you act like he's not fast, and he ran a freaking 4.45. And he, you know, his explosiveness is his jumps were like 38 inches and 10 foot or 39 inches, something like that. I don't have it in front of me. And then like a 10 foot 8 or 10 foot 10 long jump or something. He's really, really explosive. So now you got DJ, who is fast and explosive. Allen has a slow time attached to him, but there's a big asterisk on that. People made him run coming off of surgery, and he wasn't anywhere near ready to run. You know, so when he runs like a high 4.6 or a low 4.7, and that's the number you're stuck with.
Yeah.
But he wasn't healthy, you know, and he wasn't ready to run. He hadn't trained to run. So, you know, you watch him play all through his years with the Chargers. No, he's not a 4.4 guy, but he might be the best route runner in football. Mm-hmm. And he's got great, great body control. Now, he's had a lot of success, even though, you know, a lot of teams like to put a smaller guy. it's a big guy that really plays well in the slot, and it's because he's such a good route runner. But I think you've got the ability. You can do some mix and match stuff with these guys. DJ can play in the slot really well. You can have Allen go outside. Odunze has played in the slot and played outside. So you can set up matchups, excuse me, depending on what the defense is for opposing teams, to create mismatches and get the right guys in the right spot. And you know, that's only going to make things easier for Caleb, assuming that, you know, he's ahead of the curve as a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shane Waldron has got to be in heaven right now with these weapons. I'm sure he's at the board configuring some really exciting things for Bears fans. All right, a couple of questions here. Dee Starin asks the questions, what do you think about the general manager of the Falcons, Fontenot, and that pick for Penix?
You know, I said this before, I don't ever fault anybody for the pick. They set up their board. They had their plan. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that was part of their plan.
Yes.
You know, because people had, at best, him going in the teens, mm-hmm. and they took him at 8. Some people will say, well, they could have traded down and get him. Well, maybe they could, but, you know, Minnesota was in between there, and maybe they thought Minnesota might take him instead of JJ. You don't know who's going to take who. So, you know, I really can't comment. The criticism will come of whether he was right or wrong with how he plays. Now, Cousins is guaranteed a lot of money. Cousins is going to be the freaking quarterback
$100 million.
For the next 2 years. And that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can have him sit and learn, and Cousins does get hurt, so come in and play if Cousins gets hurt, that's going to be better for him. The only thing is, he's a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in saying that, you know, quarterbacks play longer now too. You know, Rodgers is 40 years old. Tom Brady played into his 40s. Cousins is 35 or 36 right now. These guys take good care of their bodies. And so even though he's 25, he's going to get at least 10 years or maybe more.
Mm-hmm. Is it common practice? Well, I won't say common, but is it out of the ordinary for somebody to be drafted without a team visit? Eric asked that question. Greg's thoughts on Falcons drafting Penix without a team visit.
I'm going to answer it this way. 3/4 of the guys we drafted, we never brought in. We went and saw them because everybody keeps track of who goes in. You know, every other team keeping track of who's on visits. And for that reason of, you know, trying to guess, you know, where they're going to go with their selection. So we very quietly would go to the guy's school and meet with him or his hometown or whatever and go from there. So a few times we brought it in and we brought him in, and one was Tommy Harris. And the only reason we did is because the other couple of years we hadn't brought him in. So then we thought, okay, we'll bring in Tommy. And I was like, well, they ain't taking him because they don't bring, you know, they draft the guy they don't bring in.
Yeah.
So it's really just messing with people.
Right. Well, but Eric is saying, yeah, but even at 8, you wouldn't, you know, that big of a draft investment.
If you went to his pro day or had
a
private workout with him or whatever, mm-hmm. and flew out to Seattle and had a meeting with him, mm-hmm. that's good. What do you got to bring him in for?
Mm-hmm.
You're really doing the same thing.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, let's move on to the third round pick, Karan. I'm going to try this.
Amagadeji.
Thank you. No practice either, Greg. You just got that. You knew it as soon as you saw the name up on the screen. Tell me about this player. A lot of people think that a lot of people were disappointed with the pick. I know that Danny Shimon thought, well, defensive line. And I challenged Danny. I said, well, who's available? Who would you pick before him? And one of the names he brought up was Austin Booker, who was the next pick for the Bears. They traded back in to the draft to get him. What are your thoughts on this big tackle from Yale?
Really, the only edge that they missed out on by taking him was the Penn State kid, the other Penn State guy.
They didn't miss out. Adisa.
The way they came off the board.
Yeah.
You know, it was, it's just that, you know, not that we really had them rated too high. It's that that's just the way they came, you know, around the league, there was question marks about some of these guys because they were a lot of them were undersized. And so, you know, they weren't a fit for every single scheme, and they lasted a little bit longer. They're fits for this scheme, which is great, but they lasted longer in the draft than you thought they would. So, yeah, was I kind of surprised at first? Yeah, but remember I said on Saturday morning when we talked about this, I said, you know, this is a guy that had been talked about a lot by analysts in, say, the 2 weeks leading up to the draft. It was a name that was getting hot because of his athleticism, his size, his length, the way he dominated Ivy League competition. So, I mean, he was looked at as a good third-round pick across the league. Okay, this guy, Jeremy Forrest, says we live in Braxton. Braxton is the left tackle. So, but anyway, this guy has got similar athleticism. He's not as fast as Braxton. He's got good bend. He's bigger. He's 323 pounds. He'll probably play, knowing Jimmy Arthur. He probably doesn't have all great weight on him. He'll have him lean up a little bit. He'll end up being 315, 318. What Jimmy does is he'll have him lose body fat and then gain it back with muscle mass. But his movement skills are excellent, which makes him a good player for left tackle. He has played inside. What my thinking is that, and I said this on Saturday, we've talked about it, is if this guy performs the way they think he will or the way they're hoping he will, that either him or Braxton could move inside the guard.
Right.
And you look, you know, the two guards are question marks. And I'm not questioning Tevin Jenkins' talent. His talent's way up here. Very, very good player, but his reliability, durability leaves something to be desired. He's been hurt every year. He hasn't played a full season yet. And his contract's up after this year. So is he a guy, and especially when you look what guards are getting now new contracts for $100 million, $90 million, you know, total over the length. Are they going to commit that much money to Tevin following this year? Or then you got the other side, Nate Davis, who did not play as anticipated. My opinion, he gets a pass because of the tragedy in his family, but he's still got to step up this year. So going into the season, they're both question marks. Can Tev play up to his ability or his talent level all season and stay healthy? Can the other guy come back and have a strong season after having a so-so year, although it was due to family circumstances? So it really, I think it shows that, you know, you got this guy and you're going to have flexibility to move one of those guys inside in another year.
Interesting. All right. We've got a question here regarding Braxton, and this Scottish Bear says, the problem, Greg, is that Braxton Jones from the waist downwards isn't strong enough to handle the bull rush and real power on the edge. And perhaps—
okay, now I'm gonna answer it this way. As a rookie, he was right. Not last year. Go back and look at the games. And yet they keep going back to his rookie year. And I'm going to go back. Came from one of the worst FCS programs in this country. Didn't have the weight training program that Joe Alt had at Notre Dame or Fashanu had at Penn State. Okay. And he worked with Olin in the offseason. He got stronger and he was a lot better. But when you take where he came from, the level of comp that he played at, and he's still a young guy, and you look at the traits, because that's what it's about, his athleticism, his overall traits. Got 35.5-inch arms. He's over 6 feet five, about 312, 313 pounds, and it's all muscle. He's got all good weight. I got no problem with this because I know he's going to be better even this year than he was last year. People keep wanting to go back to his rookie year. Throw it out. That's gone. Last year was a lot better, and the tape proves it.
All right. We'll move on now to the controversial pick of the punter, Torrey Taylor. One of the things that I wanted to share with you, Greg, is I was at the Senior Bowl 4 years ago, I think it was maybe five, and Mitch Wishnowsky, who was drafted by the San Francisco 49ers, I was looking at him punt, and I said to myself, this guy is like punting the ball like a golfer. You know, he's making it bend from right to left. He's putting a little fade left to right. He's getting the ball to just stop inside the five like it's a golf ball on a green in with a short iron. And that's basically what Ryan Poles said about this new guy, Torrey Taylor. What are your thoughts on him? And what, you know, you already expressed that you thought the value at fourth round was a little too much, but what are your thoughts on the pick now that you've had a couple of days to think about it?
Well, I think when they made the pick, they knew they could get back into the fifth round and probably assumed they were going to get one of those edge guys, which turned out to be true. I go back to what I said earlier in the show. Arazia from San Diego State didn't go until I think the sixth round. Buffalo took him. And he had a booming leg too. But then, and this goes back a while, when I was with the Giants, we only drafted one kicker the whole time I was there. We didn't draft one when I was with Chicago. So that's, I mean, between those two places, that's 27 years of drafting one kicker. Brad Maynard, who ended up being a Bear, we took in the third round, but we had extra threes. And you know, our thinking was, in the way I've been brought up in the business, is you take a kicker when you have extra picks, and you take it with the second or third extra pick that you have in a round. Mm-hmm. And if you're taking them around too high, so what? It's especially when you have the extra picks. So, but the guy is a weapon. And there's something about these Australian kickers that they can do things with the ball. And maybe it's because they're used to playing with that Australian rules, rugby, football, however you call it. It's, you know, it's a different ball. But it's like they get spin on it and stuff that you don't see from American kickers. The only guy I saw do that when I went to see him at school was Brad Maynard. And Maynard was at Ball State, and he could put the ball inside the 5 yard line, and it was like and back it up like it was a wedge shot. This guy seems to do the same thing, but the ball lands softly. I must have seen 8 or 9 kicks where he's got it inside the 10-yard line where it hits the ground and it stops or it goes sideways. He doesn't have a forward roll on it. So how he does it, I don't know. I don't know enough about kicking. But with his leg strength, he can change field positions. And that's huge, especially if you got a good defense. You don't want to give your opponents a short field. Make them work for everything.
I personally, you know, I was shocked by the pick. Didn't truly expect a punter to be drafted in the fourth round. But the more research that I do, you know, this guy seems like a no-brainer to me. I think Hightower had a lot of influence on this pick. He said, hey, what about one for me? Do you think that the new kickoff rules might have had something to do with this? Because I anticipate that Taylor might be on kickoffs too and replace.
As far as I know, he doesn't do kickoffs.
Okay.
right. Now he may have, because I looked and I couldn't find it. You got to directional kick, and you can't kick it out of the end zone anymore. You can't even kick it into the end zone. You got to leave it like between the 20 and the goal line, and preferably between the 10 and the goal line.
Yeah.
So the kicker is not doing a full kick, because right. It's a touchback. The kicking team gets penalized for it. The offense gets the ball further up the field. So it's a matter of Santos being able to just, you know, I remember when I was in the XFL, we had the same rules. And our kicker was really good. He put it between the 10 and the goal line all the time. But he took like one step and kicked. He didn't have the run because, he didn't have to put full leg into it. And here's the key. Hang time doesn't mean shit on this rule, because nobody can move until the returner touches the ball. So it doesn't matter if it's a line drive or it's 75 feet tall, because you got the two lines of players, a blocking line and a tackling line. Neither one of those guys can move 1 foot even until the returner touches the ball.
That's amazing. You know, Iowa fans had shirts punt. You know, they really wanted the punt team out there because their offense was so bad, and the only way they could get good field position was to run Taylor out there, and he would pin teams to the five, and that would help the defense and get the ball back to the offense. But it's going to be one of the interesting storylines preseason, is to go out to Hallis Hall and watch these practices and see Taylor do some magnificent things.
Well, I remember when Razia was, I was following the media in Buffalo, and this was 2 years ago at training camp. And it's like nobody could return a kick off him. He was just kicking it so far. And he did it in preseason too.
Mm-hmm. Do you think these new kickoff rules,
with the problems he had, previously?
Do you think these new kickoff rules can help Bayless Jones?
I don't know. There's an undrafted free agent that I really like for that kickoff role, and he's not a punt returner, but we'll get to him. He went to Howard. He wasn't a starter. He was in a three-man running back rotation, but he averaged 7 yards. Well, I'll talk. His name's Ian Wheeler.
Yeah, I did some work on him. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, he's a little over 5'9", 205 pounds, ran a 4.41 at the Howard Pro Day. And his jumps verify the 4.41 because he jumped out of the building. He had excellent jumps. Mm-hmm. So this guy averaged 29 yards on returns for Howard this year. He has, over the course of his career, 3 touchdowns on kickoff returns. He doesn't do punts, just those kickoffs. He's good. He's really good open field runner, and he's got strength. I think he's going to absolutely challenge for a job, because he can. The only thing I don't know if he can do it or not is pass block. And running backs got to be able to pass block, but he can do a lot.
Yeah, I saw an interview with him on a YouTube channel, NFL Draft Diamonds, and he said that he's the kind of player who wants to excel at whatever he's asked to do, and so he really pays attention to pass blocking. And I agree with you. This guy is a dark horse to make the team, and he's got really good chances because of his return abilities, and he's got that speed. If he needs to come in at running back, he's got that speed to break some big ones. It'll be interesting to see his journey with the Chicago.
I want to go back one other thing about Taylor that nobody's brought up, but they brought it up for days, weeks, and months and years when Bayless Jones was drafted. Bayless is 25, Taylor's 27.
Oh, wow. Amazing. I didn't know that.
But he's a kicker. Who cares?
Yeah. All right, let's go on to the next pick. We've talked a little bit about him already. Booker, Austin Booker, the edge receiver. You shared your
edge
thoughts.
Rusher.
Anything, edge rusher. Anything else you want to share about him?
No, I just think there's a lot of upside. He's thin, especially, from the knees down, he's got real small calves. Lawrence Taylor did too. I'm not saying this guy's Lawrence Taylor, but he's got to get bigger. But when you watch him, I mean, he's got a good stab. He doesn't get blown off the ball or anything like that. He, but you know, he played it between 240 and 245. I'd say he's got to get to 255. He won't. Knowing Jimmy the way I do, he won't be 255 this year because that won't be good weight. He wants lean weight on him. But he's got a chance to be a, if not a double digit guy, a 9, 8 to 10 type guy, and maybe even better, because he's just got some natural pass rush moves and ability. And when you think, when he hadn't played up until this year, you know, at Minnesota, he was a backup. And then you see what he done, you go, wow. Because I remember, because I think I said this on our show Saturday morning when we were talking about him leading into day three. You know, I watch a lot of Kansas because Ballard's son is the backup quarterback. And he started two games, played in four as a true freshman this year. So I'm watching the game, and this guy's jumping out. And I call Ballard, and I go, do you know anything about this defensive end? They got a guy who rushes the shit out of the passer. He goes, no, I got to ask Cole. So he calls his son. He calls me back. He says, Cole really likes him as a person, you know, really good guy. And, you know, nobody at Kansas thought he was coming out. Everybody thought he was coming back because he's only really played 1 year as a full-time player. And he had two more years of eligibility. So it was kind of a surprise. But then when he took that Senior Bowl invite, I guess, in early in December, he was staying in school. By the end of December, he was coming out. And what changed his mind, I don't know. Because he's still young. He's like 21 years old. He's still a baby.
Good stuff. All right, let's turn to some of our questions that we've collected here. Let's go to the top. Okay, so there was some news made a couple of days ago. Ryan Poles has let go two of his scouts, and their names are Sam Thumerville, who was the senior national scout, and also the area scout, Drew Rosina. What can you tell us about these guys and the move?
I don't know either guy. I don't know anything about Rosina. Somerville's got a very good reputation. And I'll say this, I'm going to write about it later in the week. Last week is like Christmas season for scouts. This is what you've worked the previous year for. So, you know, all the presents get wrapped up, and on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, you unwrap the presents, see how good the Christmas shopping was. This week is the exact opposite. It's the worst week because a lot of scouts lose their job. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it happens where you have a new general manager come in and he wants some of his own people, just like a coach does. In this case, both of these guys were Ryan Pace hires. So, and now Somerville could have been a Phil Emery hire. I'm not sure, but I think he was a Ryan Pace. Put it this way. I know we didn't hire him. So, but was there, could there have been a disconnect? I don't know. It's just, it's not unusual for this to happen. I'll say their contracts were probably up. Scouting contracts go, when I was working in the league, they went June 1st to May 31st. Now they've moved them up to May 1st to April 30th, most teams. Some of them are still using the June 1st date. So if you're going to make a change, you're making a change, especially when their contracts are up. You know, you're letting them know we're not renewing your contract. It's tough. I mean, these guys got families. Now you got to go out and get another job. But the teams that have, you know, if you look at the teams that have new general managers, you're going to see a turnover in scouts or guys that are out of contract. And where coaches get let go in January, this is when scouts get let go, and it's a tough, tough time of the year. I feel for them, especially if they, you know, if they got kids. Did either one deserve to be? I can't answer that because I don't know them, and I've never worked with them. But I do know that Somerville had a good reputation among people in the league. So, you know, it was a choice Ryan Poles made, and that's his prerogative as general manager.
Is it fair for people like ZZT in the chat to speculate that maybe they had an association with Cliff Stein and there was some uncomfortableness, discomfort with having those two guys around?
No, because Cliff didn't have anything to do with that area.
Right.
Cliff was the main corporate counsel for the team.
Yeah.
Okay, now, during the Ryan Pace years, he wasn't even doing contracts.
Mm-hmm.
He did it for us, but Ryan brought in his own guy. And then when Poles came back in, Cliff took over the contract thing, obviously because of the expertise he had. And then Cliff brought in this guy named Feinstein, and who is now the lead contract guy. And he was working for the management council at the league office. So you get really well trained in doing contracts in that program at the league office. So, people bring up, like some people said to me on Twitter, I got Cliff Stein fired. That's like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I'm trying to be nice now in my old age, so I'm not going to, but people can F off. Even say that. I've never asked Cliff what happened. It's not mm-hmm. my business. If he wants to tell me, he will do so. I've got some ideas. He was Ted's right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have something to do with it, but I'm guessing. I'm throwing a dart at the wall. I mean, he was like second in charge to Ted on Cliff was involved in everything that went on, the last 20 years.
Unbelievable. It was social media is accusing you.
And I know, Cliff was a big proponent of the Arlington Heights thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was involved a lot in negotiations and that.
Mm-hmm.
Could there have been and I'm guessing here because I don't know. Could there have been a difference of opinion between the two? Or could Kevin Warren just want his own guy for that? Which, just like Ryan Poles wants his own guy for certain things, that's, entirely possible.
Yeah. All right, back to some questions. Evie asks, why didn't we get a rookie center?
Oh, God. Because they don't need one. Everybody, they got to have a center. No, they traded a fifth-round pick in this year's draft for Ryan Bates, and they signed as a free agent, what's his name, Shelton, who was the starting center for the Rams the last 2 years. They got two centers. Now, and here's the most important part, and any coach and a guy like Olin, because I asked Olin this question, is that the worst thing you can do is have a rookie quarterback and a rookie center.
Mm-hmm.
You are leading your offense to disaster. You got two people in the middle who don't know what the hell they're doing. The offensive center is the most important guy on that line, not necessarily in what he's being asked to do in pass blocking and run blocking, and upstairs and seeing what's on the field, what defense is there, calling the protections, making changes at the line of scrimmage on the protection. You can't ask a rookie center to do that and a rookie quarterback. As Olin said to me, if you got a veteran quarterback, the quarterback can help out the center.
Mm-hmm.
You got two, you're asking for problems. And most fans don't understand that. They think, you can plug and play. The Ravens did it a couple of years ago, but their quarterback was already in the league 3 years.
Yeah. Right.
And the rest of their line was a heavy veteran line. It wasn't a young line. You know, you look at the two guards here. You got Nate Davis, who missed some time last year and was new in the system. And then you got Tev, who misses games every year. So are you going to rely on them to make the calls? Yeah. You know, it just, you got to have somebody with experience who knows what the hell they're doing.
And I apologize to her because I have mispronounced her name for the 150th time. It's Evie, as in Chevy, not Evie. And so I sincerely apologize for not getting that right. And then she writes back saying, what about a rookie center to develop, which is really what she meant. But the Bears already on the roster have a couple of rookie centers. Doug Kramer, I believe, is still with the
team. Well, he's in his third year now. But they got – if you look at what they signed, they signed some interior – and free agency, Shelton, and another guy who played for Waldron in Seattle. I can't think of his name. So they've got, and he's a guard tackle guy. Mm-hmm. Bates can play guard and center. Shelton is can play guard and center. All of them can play multiple positions. They signed a tackle who's pure tackle. I can't think of what his name is, but he got a veteran minimum, and I don't think he'll be around anyway. I don't think Borum's going to be around. And I the reason I say that is he's making $3.2 million or something like that because he got that adjusted salary for all the playtime he had his first 2 years. He earned that money, but he's going to be a backup. And are you going to pay a backup $3.2
million? Doesn't look like that will happen. You know, one of the things that Ryan Post said at the press conferences that he's had recently, he said it's going to be difficult to make this team. And so that's a message to a lot of guys like Borum. He's going to have to come into camp and play at a level that he hasn't played at before. And I wish him luck because I think he's a good guy, but there's a lot of competition out there.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem is that they really didn't have a backup left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Borum could do it, but he's not what you want.
Yes.
Okay. The guy they signed can do it. He's not what you want.
Right.
Now, granted, Amagadeji played in the Ivy League and he's a rookie, but he has the traits that you want. He has the upside. Okay. I would, you know, you go back to preseason 2 years ago when, Braxton got drafted. He won that job during OTAs. He was so good at learning things. Remember his name started coming out and the coaches started praising him during OTAs?
Yeah.
So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you hear the same type of accolades for Amagadeji, you know, once the offseason program starts, you know, for them, which is, you know, a week from next Monday.
Excellent. Before we start about some of these, talking about some of these UDFAs that were signed and any information that you could share with, I want to toss this question in from Mr. Englewood, because it is frustrating to see all these teams get comp picks and the Bears never seem to get one. Can you ask Greg to break down how comp picks are doled out? Shouldn't we have gotten something for Montgomery or Mooney?
No, because you don't get it for an individual player. You get it for the total of gains versus losses. And if you look at what the Bears have signed, the gains far outweighed the losses. So you don't get anything. You know, so people say, well, we're going to get a third for the contract Mooney got. No, we're not. We're getting nothing because they went out and signed guys and gave them money.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's a push. Now, I would think, theoretically, you might get a seventh, depending on, you know, because part of it is, you know, play time. The equation doesn't finish until after the season because play time and honors, as they call it, are part of the equation too. Mm-hmm. So, but I would think with Mooney, he got a good contract and, you look at some of the guys they signed, they paid pretty decent money for them, for a couple of these guys. To me, they offset. Could work out that they might be able to get a seventh. It's got to be where the Bears can afford to lose guys in free agency and let them go when their contract is up and they get a decent contract somewhere else and make some money. Okay, perfect example will be Keenan Allen, if you don't re-sign him. And he's going to get good money. And they might not be as big in free agency next year as they have been the first few years the Poles was here. But there's one caveat to that, because he's been in the league 10 years, but there's a thing in the league that says when you're a 10-year vet and you get losing in free and you get, go somewhere else, you can't get better than a fifth-round comp pick. But it might be with the same team. That's what I got to check on. If you're with the same team for 10 years, and then the best you can get is a fifth, regardless of the contract. And that happened earlier this year. I just can't remember the sidebar part of the equation. Is it just a 10-year vet or 10 years with a team?
Okay. A lot of people in the chat are bringing up, if Ian Cunningham gets a GM job next year, we'll probably get a comp pick as a result. Get two of them. Wow.
Nice. You get two, but I don't know. I don't know if you get two the same year or okay. You get a third. But it'd be two thirds, whether they're both next year, one the year after. I'm not sure how that works.
It was a nice moment when Poles was basically congratulating himself and Ian for what they have done in these 3 years in overhauling this roster. And he clued us in that Ian is the type of guy who will stop Ryan Poles if he's veering away from the plan, which is a meticulous approach towards building the roster without trading away valuable draft assets, et cetera, et cetera. That was a really nice moment. I know this is difficult for you to answer, but how much will the Bears miss Ian Cunningham if and when he's gone?
Well, I think because he's a valued person within the organization and he's highly trusted by Poles and his best friend, they're going to miss him a lot. Mm-hmm. Can they bring in somebody else or somebody already here that can step into that role? Perhaps. That's a what if, wait and see. Mm-hmm. He's going to get a job. Those aren't easy. It's got to be right situation at the right time. George Payton, who's now the Denver GM, must have turned down 7 or 8 jobs over the years because he wanted the right one. And he thought Denver was going to be the right one, and it's turned out that it might not be the right one. Mm-hmm. Ed Dodds with the Colts has turned down some jobs because, again, he wants the right one. The thinking is, head coaches sometimes get rehired. General managers, their thought process is, I'm only getting one bite at the apple.
Right.
So now we did see a difference in that this year. Tommy Telesco, another Buffalo guy, was let go by the Chargers as a GM, and within a month he had a job again as the Raiders GM. Mm-hmm. But that's the exception, not the rule.
Gotcha. MC Fact wants to know, Waldron has been known for tight end sets. I'd like to see him go in with more 3 and 4 sets. What do you see Waldron doing scheme-wise?
He's going to have the best guys on the field. But he likes to do – he likes – if you go 4 wide receivers, one of them is going to be a tight end. You can go to 12 personnel, one running back and 2 tight ends, 2 wide receivers. But now, you've drafted Odunze, so you're – and you drafted him with the with the ninth pick in the draft. So you're going to get his ass on the field now. You know, and now, will they use Everett? Everett's a really good move tight end.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see situations where they do both. I mean, Odunze, given the fact that he's a rookie compared to Keenan Allen and DJ, he's going to be number three. But there's going to be situations where he's going to be sitting and Everett's going to be there, and they're going to have two tight ends. But I, you know, that's up to Shane on how he wants to design that.
Right.
It's not going to change your playbook. It's changing a player at a certain position.
Yeah. I posted on the Barroom Network's X account yesterday the amount of targets these players have received last season. So Keenan, when he was with the Chargers, was targeted on average 8.5 times per game. DJ Moore, 6.5. Rome Odunze, 5.5. I think it was DJ 5.5 and Rome 6.5. And Cole Kmet, about 5.5. And now, you know, you add in Gerald Everett, ball distribution is going to be very, very interesting for this team, getting the ball to all these playmakers. And you got to count DeAndre Swift, too, because he's a pretty good pass catcher.
Yeah, no, but that's a good problem to have.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So
you know, it gets down to matchups.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And how is the defense going to match up against these guys? And because you got such a large amount of skill players, pretty potentially good, really good skill players,
mm-hmm.
What are they going to do defensively? Is that going to put them into, instead of nickel, more dime? And that theoretically could help your run game too,
mm-hmm.
because you're taking another big guy off the field.
Yeah. Lots of questions. A lot of Bears fans are still questioning Eberflus and whether he's the right coach for this team. Flex writes, Flus is the worst coach in the NFC North. How many wins will it take for him not to get launched? I think this will be a very attractive job when he goes. What are your thoughts about Matt Eberflus?
I'm going to say this right now. He's going to be here next year.
Despite what happens in 2024?
It would have to be an absolute disaster.
Okay.
The offensive coaching staff was totally revamped. Two holdovers. The line coach was one of the better line coaches in the league and the tight end coach. All the rest are new. In essence, you've got three guys who've been coordinators, or two guys who've been coordinators, and there's a lot of talent there, and they paid a lot of money for those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they come in here on 1-year contracts now. So it's their job to develop Caleb, but you know, people here drives me nuts. All they want to do is fire people. You know, I've never seen anything like it. White Sox, you know, you lose a game, you got to fire the coach. Yeah. Right away. And
this guy's taking a shot at you, by the way. He says,
tell him to go fuck himself. I was trying to be nice, but you know. if you're going to make comments like that, don't watch the show. Why are you watching the show?
He likes to come on here and try to bust balls.
So, look at what happened with in the last 3 years. You've drafted three quarterbacks in the first round. Mitch Trubisky, rookie year. Coach gets fired. You got a new coach coming in, new offense. Next time, Justin gets drafted. Fire the coach, bring in a new system, new coach, new offense, and it just makes it so much more difficult for the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to have continuity, and people don't understand that.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan understands it. And I think that, you know, I heard somebody talking about this the other day. And there's a valid point to it. And that is, when you see your mistake and you bite the bullet and get rid of that mistake instead of keeping a hold of it too long, that shows you're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And you could use two different cases. Poles with Claypool didn't work, he got rid of them. Then the same thing with Flus, with some of the coaches he had. And he got rid of the defensive coordinator for whatever reason. He got rid of the offensive coordinator, the receiver coach. Hey, let's face it, the receivers didn't develop. Every time a young receiver came here, and you can use Claypool in that thing too, they did not develop. So is that on the player's fault? You know, you can use Velus Jones. Is that on Velus Jones, or is it on the coach? Or is it a combination of the two? But now you've got, you know, pretty much the exact same offense as you had last year. Terminology, mm-hmm. very, very similar. Comes from the same tree. It's that Shanahan-McVay offense. There'll be some changes, but they're subtle changes. They're not huge changes. You'll see it in play calling, but that's not in the design of the playbook. But let's take the wide receiver group. If Adunze doesn't develop and Velus or Tyler Scott don't take steps, you know, to me, that's, you know, there's talent there. That's on the new coach.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That yesterday on my Tuesday night show, we talked about this topic a little bit. And one of the things that I said, and I'd love your opinion on it, is, you know, coaches, like players, grow and progress. So my question to you is, in all of your years, you've been around Lovey, you've been around Parcells, you've been around a lot of coaches. Did you ever witness, you know, a coach progress in terms of decision making, in terms of leadership style, in terms of just overall effectiveness that you can share with us?
Parcells.
Tell me.
George thought he made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Parcells was the defensive coordinator under Ray Perkins, and then he elevated him to head coach. Perkins took the head job at the University of Alabama. And he thought after a couple of years, you know, I made a mistake here. I don't got the right guy, but he's going to give him one more year. Turned out George made the right decision on that. You know, people are too quick to pull the plug.
Yeah.
You hired the guy for a certain reason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you know, you strip this team down in year one. Who's going to do any better than what they did? You know, they had no players.
Right.
Okay. So now year two, you still didn't have, you had one, really one wide receiver on the team last year, DJ. You know, now you got some more, but it's, you know, I'm still not totally for trading Justin. You know, put it this way, it's going to be really interesting to see how he develops and plays down in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And you know, that'll say whether Ryan made the right decision, but I get it. He got his own guy in. He's got a, you know, restarts the clock on a rookie contract. He's building the team to his likeness, his image and likeness. That's fine. That's what he's getting paid for. I'm doing it. I might have traded out of the pick and got that haul and build up the team that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
maybe,
I was thinking about that.
If Caleb turned out to be an all-time great, he turned out to be another Mahomes, and he likes to pattern himself after Rodgers more than Mahomes. Well, hell, that's a great pick.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning is, you know, I'm happy with the team and I'm happy that Caleb is now a Bear and so forth. I've moved on, but it did cross my mind. What if we would have kept Justin, traded that number one for a haul? How, you know, everybody's excited now. Would we have been even more excited with the haul, knowing we've got now multiple first round draft picks into the future? We picked up, you know, two or three instant starters this year, but, you know, that's just hypotheticals. And we don't deal in hypotheticals around here. All right, let's get on to undrafted free agents. Anyone like Jim Bob?
Yeah, I don't have a lot more time because I got to pick up my
that's
neighbor
right.
at the hospital.
Yeah, you want to share that? That
no.
Okay. I just want to say bless you. Bless you, Greg Gabriel. Any one of those UDFAs stand out? You talked about Ian Wheeler. This guy's going to compete for a return job, a special teams job, because he's just not only a return man, he's a gunner and so forth. What about the kid out of Illinois? There seems to be a lot of love pointed his way. What's his name? Keith Randolph. Thoughts
Keith
on
Randolph,
him?
Good football player.
Mm-hmm.
I see him as playing the one here. He's 6'3.5", 296. He's got good arm length for that. He's got good strength. He you know, you'd wish he ran a little bit faster. You know, he's a 5'1" guy. That, I mean, that's fine because you're really not worried about the 40. It's more the 10. This 10 is good. But the guy made plays. The only thing what dropped off this year, and I wrote these guys up for Windy City today, and the article's already up. You look at his, like, 21, 22, and 22 production, then 23. 22, he had his best year. He had 4.5 sacks and 13 tackles for a loss. This year, he had, like, 1.5 sacks or one sack, and his tackles for loss went down. Now, I can't answer as to why that happened, but then the year before, in 21, he had 4 sacks. So in those 2 years, he had 8.5 sacks. 8.5 sacks for interior linemen, that's a good number. And you watch the flashes, and the flashes are really good. You know, he gets off of blocks quick. He gets penetration. He can be disruptive. I don't think he can play the 3. He doesn't have the explosiveness that you want at the 3. But reality is you need another one. And people say, well, they got Pickens. Well, I personally think Pickens is a 3. You know, when you look at the athleticism and his size and his explosiveness, but they had to play him because they play a rotation. Now, there's one guy, in my opinion, that this Randolph has to beat out, and that's the free agent they signed, Coward, who has been up and down in his career. When he was with New England, he was up and played pretty darn good. Okay, since then, it's been more down. And he's even been practice squad after having some strong seasons. But you know the talent's there because he's done it. But, you know, if you're a coach and you got a rookie that says, and he's got upside and he's working his ass off in practice, you're going to say, wait a minute, I'm going to go with this guy because I think he's just going to get better. Mm-hmm. Versus a guy that has been hot and cold the last 3 years in the league. You know, so it'll be interesting to watch him in the preseason and practice. It's not just what they do in the games, it's what they do in practice. So, but he's got a good chance. I mean, better than 50-50 chance. I got 3 rookies with a chance to make the 53. Wheeler, who we talked about, this guy. And then the other guy is another defensive lineman, Jamri Crom. How do you say that name?
I want to say Cromar.
And he played at James Madison, so it's a little bit lower. Most of the schools in the conference James Madison plays at were FCS level schools that made the jump up to Division I. But it's a low, it's probably the lowest D1 level, lower than the MAC as far as overall competition level of play or whatever. But James Madison's, you know, got a decent program. This guy's productive now, but he's a one-year wonder. That's the thing. In that, you know, like last year he had, you know, meaning 2022, he had like one or two sacks. He had 10 this year and really played well. But he played both inside and outside. He could play a three or he could play the end for them. I can't see him as a three. He's 274 pounds. He's 6'3 and a half, 274. He runs a 4.7. He's got long arms. I saw one place that had like 35-inch arms, and he had at his pro day had 34.5-inch arms. That's long arms. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's ideal length arms, especially for an outside guy, for an edge. He's got some explosiveness to him, plays hard. But if you're going to – let's say what Weederer says is true, and I believe you've got to get another veteran edge. You know, you can't stick a rookie out there. You got to have – And you want four. Yep. Robinson's going into his third year. You thought he was going to take a jump last year, and he didn't. He just leveled off. So is it all over for him? And, you know, Booker is going to be there. They used next year's four on him. You know he's going to be there. This guy has a chance. My thinking is he'd probably end up – it depends on if they sign a vet. They sign a vet. This guy will probably end up being on the practice squad, but there's talent there. And he's got that hustle. When you're watching tape, you want to see guys that are snap to whistle type players.
Right.
And that's what he is. But like you say, it's he showed it all his last year. And you know, playing at James Madison in that league, why didn't he show it? And I didn't look at 22 tape, so I got to be honest on that part. But why didn't he do it in 22 and it was just 23? Or is it he just all of a sudden came on? You know, the light turned on, which very well could have happened too. That's what happened with Booker.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, last question. We'll get you out of here. Ryan Poles, third year. He strips down the team in his first year. It's ugly to watch. Second year, we start to see some new acquisitions. And then now third year, this roster is virtually completely transformed. There's still some holes, but I want your overall opinion on the approach that Ryan Poles took to rebuild this team and so far what it seems like the results are.
I think he gets a... He'll get an A, he gets an A minus. I mean, he's done a hell of a job. And it wasn't easy. He's had to make some tough decisions. Yep. And he's made them. And it's not easy to do. So, and, you know, like we talked about a little earlier, he made some mistakes, made a mistake with the one trade. But he bit the bullet and traded him back out of here. So I think he's got the team going in the right direction. You hope that this season is a plus. I've said a bunch of times in the last couple of weeks, I want to see what the schedule is, who we play in first and who we play in second. I think that's going to have a lot to do with how the season goes, because if you can come out of the gate and get a win in week one, that's a confidence builder, especially with a rookie quarterback. So, you know, we'll see. And I know we're not playing Green Bay in week one because they're playing in Mexico or Brazil or someplace like that. You know, so we'll know that. I think if the schedule comes out the way it has the last couple of years, it'll come around the 11th, 12th, or 13th of the month. Okay. So end of next week or the week after will be the schedule release, and that'll help us. But I'd be shocked if they don't have a winning record this year. I don't think it's a lock that they're in the playoffs because they have a rookie quarterback. But I think that if they get off to a fast start like Houston did, then the chances improve.
Outstanding. Great show, Greg. I can't wait for the next one, and have a great rest of the day and good luck with your,
I got to do a thing with, Swifty later today too. After I,
oh great,
do my good deed for the day,
good Samaritan deed. Yes, Tweet that out or post that on X? You're working on?
Yeah, whether he shows it then or not, but I know I don't know. But you know, he came on our show was the last week, and so I own one, so yeah. This is payback time, and I enjoyed his time on our show last week. I thought he did a great job,
and so did the fans. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So I'm looking forward to that. And I know we're supposed to go at 3, whether it's live at 3. I don't know, because I don't know how he does the shows.
Okay. Well, we'll be looking for that on his account and on yours. And I just want to let people know, Mac and Reed at 6 p.m., they'll review the draft. And then Danny Shimon and I return at 8 p.m., with Herb Howard, and we'll talk about the Bears' upcoming season, or we'll just talk Bears. So with that, thank you everyone who joined us live, and thank you for those people who will watch on demand. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Thanks, everybody.